As an introduction, hopefully being located here in New Orleans as we are right now, we're all aware that land loss is a huge problem in Louisiana. Louisiana has the highest rate of land loss in the United States, and you can see from this graph all the areas in red here are areas that have been lost since 1932. Now, land loss is caused by a combination of factors, including things like natural subsidence, sea level rise, human modifications to hydrology. But one of the problems that we're experiencing is saltwater intrusion. And in order to address this, the Army Corps of Engineers and the Louisiana Department of Natural Resources began constructing these freshwater diversion projects. And the first one is Carnarvon Diversion, which was completed in approximately 1991. And this diversion diverts freshwater from the Mississippi River into Breton Sound Estuary for the purpose of reducing salinity to benefit oyster fishermen mainly. A second diversion, known as Davis Pond Diversion, was opened in approximately 2002. And I say approximately because infrastructure was completed at that time. However, it is still to this day ongoing design modifications. My project took place in the Davis Pond Diversion, which is located approximately 12 miles upstream of New Orleans. It's on the west bank of the Mississippi River and drains into upper part of Barataria Basin. The unique thing about this system compared to the Carnarvon Diversion is the fact that it flows into this ponding area here. So the ponding area is approximately 9,000 acres in size. It's bordered on three sides by earthen levees and then on the fourth side by a rock weir. And when I mentioned those design modifications, it had to do with the invert of that rock weir downstream was being too high, so water was actually flooding the roads up north of the diversion. So the total capacity is 320 cubic meters per second, making it the largest diversion ever constructed. And similar to Carnarvon, the goals of the diversion are to reduce salinity within the estuary, to enhance wildlife habitat. And as we're learning more about land loss, they're also saying, well, maybe this has the potential to increase accretion due to nutrient influxes and also maybe even some sediment influxes. There's a lot we still don't know about these diversion projects. And most of the concerns are focused around the high level of nitrate in the Mississippi River water. Mississippi River water carries nitrate from the upper part of the estuary, upper part of the watershed, from fertilizer runoff and waste disposal, and we're talking levels between 1 and 2 parts per million, with the highest levels occurring in the springtime. And this graph here in the red is chlorophyll levels. This is the mouth of the Mississippi River, and this is just showing you that the high nutrients in the Mississippi River have been attributed to algae blooms in the Gulf of Mexico and hypoxia. So our concerns lie in the fact that we're worried that the high nitrate loads may cause eutrophication within Barataria Basin. And we're not sure if the wetland that's receiving it, the Davis Pond wetland, has the ability to remove this excess nitrate. And we're also not real clear about where the water is going once it comes into that ponding area, what the retention time is, what the flow path is. So basically, what we're in need of is a tracer that can look over a large spatial scale. We chose to look at denitrification enzyme activity as a potential tracer. And just as review, these are facultative aerobic soil bacteria that under anaerobic conditions, which are normally present in wetlands, they're able to produce this extracellular enzyme known as nitrate reductase, which allows them to utilize nitrate as their terminal electron acceptor in place of oxygen. And to the benefit of society, this changes it into dinitrogen gas, which can then be lost from the system. So some of the advantages of using DEA as an indicator are the fact that it responds quickly and proportionally to the concentration of nitrate that's inputted into the system. It also has a fast turnover rate. We're talking on the order of days to hours compared to something like plants, which turn over seasonally. And also DEA represents in-situ denitrification. It's actually the amount of enzyme that was existing at the time you sampled. The objectives of my study were twofold. First of all, to determine the spatial extent of the Davis Pond wetland that had elevated rates of DEA. And then also to correlate DEA and nitrate concentration in the water column in a controlled lab experiment. In the field, we took approximately 150 soil cores over a random sampling grid throughout the wetland area. And all these cores were collected between the months of May and June of 2006. And during this two-month period, the discharge was pretty constant, between 28 and 34 cubic meters per second. And just to recall from the previous slides, the total capacity of this diversion is 320 cubic meters per second. So we're talking about only 10%, a very low discharge. And soil was divided into two depths, 0 to 10 and 10 to 20 centimeters. Back in the lab, I measured DEA using the acetylene block technique, in which nitrous oxide was prevented from reducing into dinitrogen gas and was then measured on a GC ECD detector. And I limited it to a two-hour time period in order to make sure I'm just seeing the rate of what was pre-existing in the soil. No new enzymes were being activated, no new carbon was being mineralized. And I reported my DEA as a rate of nitrous oxide gas per kilogram of soil per hour. And this graph is just an example of the types of rates I would get, a high rate versus a low rate. So when I put all this together and put it onto a GIS map, this is what I got. And the larger the circle, the higher the rate of DEA. And the legend here is kind of difficult to read, but we're ranging from 0 up to about 2. In order to simplify this a little bit, we put it into a frequency distribution. And where I've drawn this red line is where we observed a natural break, both in the data itself and also in the spatial distribution in the wetland. So what we did was say, okay, anything below this break point is what I would consider a background rate of DEA, and anything above this we would consider elevated. So with that, we were able to simplify this a little bit, and you can see a little more clearly now exactly where we're seeing the elevated rates of DEA. And again, the flow path here, you can see, is kind of flowing to the east and out. It appears that about 840 hectares, or 22% of this total wetland area, is seeing these elevated rates of DEA. And going back to that short-circuiting and flow path that I mentioned earlier, it also seems evident that there is indeed some degree of short-circuiting, maybe reduced retention times, because of these splay ridges that we found on the western part of the wetland that I've highlighted here in black. So in order to validate the relationship between DEA and nitrate in the water column, I also collected approximately 40 replicate intact cores from Davis Pond in an area that had pretty close to background rates to begin with. I brought them back to the lab and developed a continuous flow-through system in which cores were loaded with a 10-centimeter water column of either 0.5, 1, or 2 milligrams per liter of nitrate solution. And then over time, these cores were eventually taken out and divided into three depth horizons, 0 to 5, 5 to 10, and 10 to 20. So the relationship we were expecting to get from previous studies was that as nitrate increased, we would also see an increase in DEA. What we actually saw was pretty darn close. You can see on the x-axis here are my four treatments, and on the y-axis is DEA. And there's a couple interesting things about this graph. First of all, you'll notice that this particular one is B0 parts per million nitrate solution. So again, we're seeing a background rate of a little above 0.4 milligrams of nitrous oxide per kilogram of soil per hour, even though no additional nitrate was being added. So this again confirms the fact that there is internal loading, internal cycling within the system, and a background rate does occur. Also, there's two different depths represented on this graph. The large ones are, of course, the 0 to 5 centimeter horizon, and then the smaller ones that I've circled here are the 5 to 10 centimeter horizon. So we can see that although the vast majority of DEA is occurring in the top 5 centimeters of soil, we are seeing a little bit, and it's also exhibiting the same pattern as the upper horizon in the 5 to 10 centimeters. And I'll also mention that I did measure DEA on 10 to 20 centimeters, and there was essentially no DEA, so it's not represented on this graph. Just to reiterate the fact that Davis Pond is capable of removing excess nitrate, This is a surface water samples that we collected in a transect from the actual site. And you can see at the top of the graph is the Mississippi River. It's coming in at about 2 parts per million. And by the time it exited Davis Pond, it was at about 0.5 parts per million. So we're seeing a 75% nitrate removal efficiency. So in conclusion, we found that Davis Pond does appear to effectively be removing excess nitrogen even at this low discharge rate, utilizing only 22% of the total wetland area. There does appear to be some short-circuiting at this low discharge rate, and it seems that DEA is a suitable indicator for mapping a flow path. Also, in relation to just DEA, we found that about 93% of all activities occurring in the upper 5 centimeters of soil, with about 7% at 5 to 10 centimeters and none below 10 centimeters. We also found a significant correlation in the lab between DEA and surface water concentration of nitrate, and that there was a background rate of DEA that averaged around 0.4 to 0.5 milligrams of nitrous oxide per kilogram of soil per hour. Some questions that this study wasn't able to answer. They did not increase the flow rate because of the design issues. And so we weren't able to see exactly how the flow path would change at higher discharge rates if we'd get an increase in sheet flow. And we also weren't able to see if the nitrate removal would be changed. And a paper by DeLon in 2005 indicated that as the discharge rate increased from about 34, which is comparable to what my study was, to 100 cubic meters per second, that there was about a 20% decrease in efficiency. So that is something that needs to be looked at in the future. And with that, I'll take questions. Not at this time. We've shared our information with the Department of Natural Resources in case they want to make design modifications. But I think at this point, they're just trying to get the diversion running up to somewhere close to capacity. And then maybe at that point, the increased water levels will cause more of a sheet flow.
Yeah. You mentioned this, some clay deposits or something. What the total elevation difference in that area?
It's a good question, and that's one of the reasons that this study was so important. There is no topographic map of this area, so we really have no idea what's going on, and that's why we're trying to come up with some sort of tracer. But judging from it, I mean, it's visibly higher. It has cypress trees on it where most of the rest of the wetland is either submerged aquatic or emergent vegetation, so there is definitely ridges there.
Any other questions? All right, thank you, Lisa.